What's up, Toby? We have made it
Hey,
to podcast, Process Step podcast number 28.
Woohoo!
No.
All right.
It is Friday for everybody that's listening. Hopefully you've had a good week.
Yes. Happy Fridays.
I mean, you know, fix it Friday. That's why we launched these on Friday, because it might be the only day in the corporate world in which you actually have some time to work on your part of the business to make your life better.
Chris, that's such an interesting point. Did Fridays feel like the time where you have a little bit of space?
My favorite time to work is Saturday morning, about 7:30 to 9:30.
Oh, it's nice. That's just prime time for you.
It is free work, meaning yep. I get to work on whatever I want. Mm-hmm. I'm not bugged. I can go and scratch an itch, and it's actually a lot of times it's really rewarding.
Yeah, I love that.
All right, today's topic: why do businesses suck so much at change? That is today's topic.
I love how eloquently and simply you put that.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do they suck?
Yeah.
Why is it that the difference between success and failure is literally a coin flip?
Yes. 100%. So
isn't that a little more important to, you know, we're actively disrupting our own businesses. We don't always even harden how the processes work.
Yeah.
And then we're throwing our success and our livelihood in the air on a coin.
Yep. Yeah. And you say coin flip, we do have some statistics here. There was a study in 2016 by the CEB Corporate Leadership Council, where they stated that 50% of initiatives are outright failures, whereas 16% have mixed results and 34% are successes.
Nice.
So,
well, who doesn't want to bet on that? 1 in 3. It's not just a 50%. 1 in 3 is people are going to step back and say, well, shit, that went the way we hoped.
Man, that worked.
That's a great, you know, that's not bad batting average.
Yeah.
100, I suppose.
No.
But with people's livelihood, I think we want a little bit more assurance.
Yeah.
Well, talk to me about, why do you think that is? Just the statistics aside, like, what's your gut say about why only a third of these big change initiatives are viewed as successes?
That's a good question. I think most of the time people don't know why they're changing, or the people that are having changed are having change pushed down from above.
Yeah.
It's not clear. I think some of this comes down to like just alignment.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the basketball team is out there like tackling people like football, cause they don't know what the game is. Like they understand the goal is get the basketball in the hoop and play an offense and a defense. And there's a lot of strategy. And I think on the business side, it's really hard to change because you don't know what game you're playing.
Yeah. Yeah. So many businesses at their most foundational level forget that it's basically intake of raw materials or human capital.
Yep.
Turn it into something more valuable than the people that are just shuffling through your warehouse or offices, and then produce something that creates value both for customers, employees, and shareholders. And so, the statistics around what we now call digital transformation, I think, are equally bleak, you know, and part of it is we have, and quite literally, I remember a client, a senior executive came back from the holidays, had gone on a ski trip with a friend that was an SAP bigwig, and his, you know, welcome to the new year was, we're going to lay out $10 million for SAP. We're going to start with the finance module. His entire finance team at this company was maybe 14 people.
Sounds
14 good. People in a business that was manufacturing a raw material. They knew how to weigh it. They knew how the flow went.
And this was 10 finance? This wasn't supply chain.
Well, the 10 million, they were starting with finance. So now you give people that are kind of mailing it in because they don't give a shit. let's be honest, right? A lot of people, it's like, I got to have a job. This is better than the last shitty job I had.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
The people aren't total assholes. And so, so then you're going to go to them and say, everything that you know about like just showing up and getting work done and then getting back to your life, we're going to completely disrupt that.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to give you a system designed by German minds that have an entirely different schema.
Yeah.
So now we want you to think differently about the work you did. So they were several million dollars in. They launched the finance piece and the finance folks all nodded and, oh, thank you so much. And they kept using their spreadsheets and they used it as a very, very expensive ledger system that they would upload to once a month. That's what they learned was, how do you appease the boss who goes off on ski trips, fancy villas, and then makes bad choices? So,
okay,
I think that's large.
What was going through the decision maker's head that was like, SAP?
Yeah.
Was it getting a logo? Not necessarily in like getting a logo, but like, I wonder what, like, I'm really curious about these things as far as like, what was the frustration that was going through this person's head?
Yeah.
Right.
The idea that comparison is the thief of joy immediately comes to mind as the response. Right. And so when you're talking with a professional peer and they're sharing what they attribute their success to.
Sure.
Especially at those senior executive levels, they don't always understand the blocking and tackling mechanics.
Yeah, yeah.
A different client just about 10 years ago now needed a supply chain solution, but instead gutted all their financial systems first. And so they got $90 million pregnant. No. With their version of SAP that still didn't replace the corporate headquarters dysfunction, and they still had supply chain problems. Like, so when we're trying to solve great, big, vast things that we don't understand, and I think this is, my opinion is, you know, it's people making decisions in isolation instead of walking the shop floor. We've talked a lot about, you know, Toyota philosophies and the whole Deming notion, like get close to the process. But when, you know, whether it's ski villas or whether it's making pronouncements from the floor with all the great views, you know, the solutions don't fit the problem.
Can you CapEx that SAP?
Yeah, the beauty is then there's this really lovely, well, accounting treatments vary.
Okay, and all right, okay.
Just choices, so I won't geek out all the way.
Okay, all right. Well, I appreciate the minor geek out. Because my little tiny budget here is like, why in the world would I ever spend $11 million on SAP, whatever, right? On a software. So, all right, geek out a little bit on capital expenditures.
Yeah. So CapEx, OpEx, right?
Yep.
CapEx means we're going to put it on the balance sheet and we'll slowly depreciate it over time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we can spread out that cost against future income.
Got it.
Alternatively, if it's operating expense, we recognize it this year, goes directly against this year's income. So a lot of times organizations, they're looking at it and they're like, God, we don't want to eat $90 million of costs this year. So let's spread it out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a long old asset.
Yep.
We're going to use this system for years.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they discover that they've actually absolutely just bumblefucked it. Not doing anything that it was intended to do. And this is where... You ever hear the phrase impaired asset? Impaired is not just beer goggles at 2 a.m. and wondering why you parked your car in the middle of your front yard. An impaired asset is not just a car that's smoking, you know, it can just pull it on fire. A lot of corporate impaired assets are these projects that never delivered the value.
Yeah.
Then they go back and auditors are asking, Is your SAP system really a $90 million asset? Really? Say that with a straight face? And they're like, okay, maybe it's nine. It's such a shit job. I'm a total potty mouth. I don't know what's going on. Happy Friday, man. But this kind of winds me up because I have a background in finance. And then I'm hearing you guys trying to mansplain to me like, that was the best $90 million bucks we could have ever spent.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I feel like if we start a consulting company, we should call it Beer Goggles Consulting.
We're here to,
I have a friend that's like, I can be a CEO and you don't even have to pay me market. Just give me $2 million and I will screw this thing up less than most. And I'm like, you know what? You have a fighting chance.
I'll tell you, for $1.5 million and a nice pension, I won't even show up and bring bad ideas into the office. I mean, it's not free, but the avoided cost could be considerable. You
know? Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Well, I'll tell you that I like your earlier comment about change, and it's that not only do we have organizations, like think about today, you know, we were talking about big ERP systems, but today, the last 18 months, everybody's been rushing to figure out what's our AI strategy? What does artificial intelligence, whether it's, you know, generative AI, creating new things, whether it's agents to interact with our customers, horrible idea.
Yep.
You know, how many different ways can we use these emergent technologies? And I think that it is, it's always this comparison.
Yeah.
So many excellent point solutions.
Yep.
Just blown out of proportion. And we're invariably drawn to the new and sexy thing. And so everywhere I turn, you know, the IVR systems now that instead of like press one to talk to somebody that pretends to care, they give me an AI agent that says, oh, did you say you'd like to speak to potato salad? And I'm like, no, I'm trying to, you know, and so that we talked about this in a prior episode, this disassociation between businesses and their and their customers. But I think poor change management has exactly the same effect of damaging the relationship between a business and its employees.
Yeah.
Customers may or may not experience it, but we're whiplashing employees left and right.
Well, it's hard to know why. Right. And then it's also hard when you know, we've been around a couple years.
Yeah. Two or three.
And so when you realize that when someone comes out and you're like, the general mood of the office is, I'm not sure that one's going to work. And so, and that's not always the case, right? Like sometimes you're like, the pieces are starting to come together, but there's some where you're like, not sure what the problem is that we're solving here. Followed with don't exactly know how this is aligned.
Yeah.
And don't know the necessary action steps, which makes changing really hard, because then it's like, okay, well, I'm going to guess to see where my next step is on the journey. And you're kind of just, you're looking for social cues on whether it's the right change. Right. And then I think people do little micro mutinies.
Yes.
Where it's like, you're going to test resistance to see if you're going to get in trouble, because then you found the boundary. I mean, we all, like I said, in some ways we all become like these teenagers for our companies that we work with. We're like, we need you to be home at midnight. And you're like, well, let's shoot for 12:30 and see what happens.
Yeah.
Like,
does it matter? Is there a consequence? Okay. See you tomorrow.
Not really sure.
No, I love that. And I think when we couple, like, life feels like it's changing faster because we have so much information thrown at us.
Yeah.
And enormous volumes any day that, you know, to try to stay aware of what's going on and then keeping up with the lives of the people that matter to us when we're more broadly spread out than we've ever been geographically, but have the means to keep tabs. It's not like I jumped a boat and went to a foreign continent 100 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, I can FaceTime somebody on another continent.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have an obligation to maintain that connection. So then when work is chaotic, oh my Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think
the coin flip.
Yeah, I think it's also hard because sometimes it's change for change's sake.
Yeah.
Meaning like I've got a problem, and the simplest way to do that is to name the problem and head in that name direction, and that name direction is change, right? So it's like this reciprocal loop that will never be successful. And I think I brought this up before, like people don't think about cohorts. Like almost everything that we do, there is something else to compare it to, right? So if you want to find a unsuccessful business model, host an Olympics. Like it is a great way for your city to lose a ton of money because they're all bespoke. Nothing's the same. But if you want to see how much you're going to go over budget, just do an estimate of how many go over budget. And that's pretty much where you're going to be.
Chris, that's such a horrible truth.
Yeah. And most businesses do not want to hear what your cohort is because they will realize, oh, shoot, this is going to be hard. Like a great example of this, like the best way to remodel your house is to just do some research for how much it costs in your area to remodel your kitchen. And if your contractor is like, oh, we can do it for 50 grand. And you're like, okay, well, the average is, you know, we can do it for 15 grand. The average is 50 grand. You know what? You're going to be closer to the 50 grand because they're going to open something up and they're going to be like, oh man, look what we found.
Yeah. Averages have a place.
Oh, 100%.
And they're a really powerful point of reference. So just like the statistics you mentioned at the top of the show here,
yeah,
you know, statistics have a place and it gives us some more objective perspective on what's actually going on. So,
yeah, it's interesting. Like if you could change even that, you know, we talked about 16% are kind of mixed results. Like even if you could pick that up, I mean, it'd be interesting to know what the dollar value is on that.
Yeah.
Or expand that piece.
Years ago, being a finance guy and then helping, you know, Fortune 500 clients navigate big change initiatives, I tried to monetize. I tried to put a value premium on why would you spend money on all the communication and all the stakeholder engagement? Why do you tell people, bring them into the room and help understand from the people doing the work why it's so critical?
Yeah.
And it was incredibly difficult because it's all soft money. It's people's salaries and it's quiet. And we, to try to actually put a dollar value, we can see the hours people are in a room, but we can't see that as visibly on the adoption side.
Well, you can't,
depending on the change.
It's hard to measure happiness.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Like, let's just say, like, I guarantee you these 50% that were failures, right? Not only do you have upset employees, You've got change fatigued employees that don't want to change again.
Yeah.
And so it's like you're creating like this super resistant internally that if you make any change, and we want to make a change because it reduces stress or something.
Yeah. Think about the human body when all of a sudden we have an overactive immune system and all of a sudden it's to our own detriment.
Yeah.
Autoimmune diseases are rampant.
Yeah.
And within the organizational body, we see the very same thing happening. So
we are at time. I'm going to end it with a very cool Gen AI prompt that I came up with this week. So when you do, so the way that the GPT prompts work is you can import a lot of data into the chat stack.
A lot of pleases.
A lot.
Please and thank you.
Would you please do this? So you can do a long chat because it's going to pick up that context because every time you send that back, it's going to send the whole context along, right? So there's high memory on the ask, but there's low memory on the output oftentimes.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the problem I was trying to solve was how do I write a long form document? Scope of work, product release requirement doc, using a prompt. And the solution was to give it a chain of thought prompt, which is you're going to be getting a transcription. You are to take that transcription and summarize that in a table of contents. And then your objective is to write each section and ask me if each section is okay. It's brilliant and it's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, it's slick.
That That sounds absolutely, that's such a next order of prompt engineering than I think most of us typically use.
Yeah, most. And you know? I basically what happened is I got really frustrated because I was trying to, I was recording these like long 10 minute transcriptions of like, this is what I want to do, right? This is what I want to do. And then I'd be like, write me a long article. And I'd be like, the summary is this. And you're like, gosh.
Yeah. And you're trying to thought the way, not summarize, but expand on this.
Yeah, yeah,
incorporates.
Yeah. And so what happens is it gives you the table of contents, right?
Yeah.
And then it says, would you like me to write the summary? I sure would. Would you like me to write the problem statement? I sure would. And it just, and you can tweak it along the way. It's very cool. Anyway, that is your Fix It Friday solution. And we are done with this week's podcast. We made it through 28. Thanks, man.
Good stuff.
All right.
Happy Friday.
Yep. Talk to you later.
Bye. See ya.